I managed to get Bruce Cowan on the line. Bruce, are you there?
I am here.
Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Thank you. I guess I just want to start out and say that I need you more than ever in my life right now as a presence of stability. And, you know, I'm a very passionate person and can fly into lots of, you know, I don't want to discredit people with legitimate mania, but, like, you know, I can get really passionate about things, and it's so nice to have folks who are able to come at me with facts and solidity and maybe not tamp down my general existential dread completely, but at least help me resolve into some kind of morning dew about it.
All right. Well, I'll do my best. I have to say that I do descend into that dread place at times, and I really find that the only thing for it is to do the work, and that really helps me.
Yeah, I think that's and remembering to do the work is something that I just signed up for text messaging for a certain Democrat's office, and I plan to actually find ways to take active steps, which I want to talk to you about some of those options for everyone who's interested in getting involved in this kind of outreach. And we'll hopefully talk about that in the next. But, you know, kind of what I like to do when we have you on here as one of our recurring guests is to just kind of get a picture from you where you see our current political climate from a macro perspective. And so obviously this last week we lost RBG. And can you talk to us about the implications of that and how it's affecting our upcoming election amidst everything else that's going on?
Yeah, certainly. What a tremendous blow. And, you know, before we talk about the implications part, you know, it's like once you passed, it was like, damn, can't we just have a few days to rend our garments
right
before we start talking about filling this seat?
No.
I'm following it all, but this the grief still just jumps out and grabs me. I saw a picture today. She's lying in state, and there's a picture of her personal trainer. And he went down and did a few push-ups by her coffin.
Oh my God.
It just grabbed me. It's just really moving.
Wow.
She's so important to so many people here.
Yeah. A huge, huge loss. And, I mean, one that was somewhat expected, but, like, yeah, could it have happened at in a place where we actually would have had time to mourn before, as in Hamlet, what do they say? You know, the funeral tables were furnished out with wedding dinners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is kind of the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, I she held on as long as she could, but it would have been wonderful if she could have made it the whole way.
As she wanted to, right?
So,
and she was quoted as saying
she
wanted to survive that long.
She made our country a more just place, and her life was very important to me as a white man. Even my life is better because the women around me have opportunities they didn't have when I was a kid, and her work with gender equity, that work that was going on back in the 60s and 70s, really made it possible for me to have a career teaching young children. That wasn't something that men did before then. So we have a long way to go, of course, but and you and I are kind of a all-male panel here. I did talk to Arielle Spesser about this. I thought it would be good to get her take on it. You know, she's an attorney who lives in Port Townsend, and she's done a lot of work helping low-income people, and she admired RBG as a brilliant orator and legal writer, and how she used case law cleverly to move us toward gender equity, how she used male litigants to demonstrate how unfair the laws were. So, and she sees her as a role model, Arielle as a mom and an attorney, and RBG carried a load like that even more when she and her husband were in law school and he got cancer. So, it is a huge loss. And she accomplished so much, and now we need to carry on the work that she did so advanced so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's great. I'm so glad you reached out to Arielle on that, because she's obviously an inspiration to me and in this community, being, you know, a young person and a city councilor and You know, also happens to be, Nat Danger is the husband of Ariel Spesser, and Nat Danger, or Jacob, is one half of the Death of Comedy, which was in our last hour we talked to Michael Grady. So it's all
right.
It's all interconnected, and Ariel. I keep planning to get Ariel and Nat on the air, maybe in some kind of like what would it say, like a those two minds together, you know, talking about some of these things could be both hilarious mm-hmm. and quite edifying. So I'm glad you sought out her input.
Yeah. Well, we did kind of have an all-male panel here, so I thought it was important.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, so
when it comes to the replacement, you know, I never did expect Lindsey Graham or Mitch McConnell to be consistent or honest about this power play that's going on, and it's really outrageous, and it's important to speak up about it. For them, it's just a power calculus, and they have to think of the political ramifications of it. Most Americans don't want them to proceed, but I think they will. And certainly Mitt Romney showed his true colors. And I have a feeling they'll name Amy Coney Barrett later today and then do their best to ram it through committee and the whole Senate very quickly, even as we are voting now on the next president in some parts of the country.
What do you see as the fastest they could actually get Amy Coney Barrett confirmed?
I couldn't tell you. You know, they have to get through committee first, and that is going to include, it must include some interrogation of her by other members of that committee in the Senate, which includes a certain Kamala Harris.
Mm, right. I remember from the Kavanaugh hearing. So, but they couldn't just call a vote tomorrow. They would have to go through committee.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how the rules work, but certainly in the court of public opinion, that's not going to fly for them to just skip a step.
Right.
I think it does have to be approved in committee, and they have the votes there, of course, to make that happen. How, and then they will, I would expect them to have the minimal committee work and then the minimal amount of floor time for it.
But at least we'll get some maybe televisions into some of those hearings, so
mm-hmm.
the American people can yeah. at least feel somewhat a part of this process. That, you know, maybe yeah. after Romney, like you said, after Romney declared, I felt like, okay, well, I just have to accept this now as reality.
We have to raise the roof over it. Really, yes, we may have to accept it, but it has not happened yet, and. We need to make as much noise as we can about it along the way there. It's an unpopular thing for them to do, and they're going to do it anyway. So I think complaining about that is important at every level and every step of the way.
Okay, that's good to know. So we don't have to feel like we just need to roll over for this because we won't have the, mm-hmm. the Republicans who we thought might consider against it. But, you know, do you think it's probably there's something to do with Romney's pro-life status or stance that has to do with this?
Sure. Well, he is a Republican, and he is a conservative, and he wants a majority on the court. And that may be the only, you know, that could, a lot of those senators can support that. They may be looking doubtfully at Trump and thinking that he's likely to lose. But at least we can get the court out of it, and that'll be a long-lasting victory for them if they secure that seat for the long term, and it would be a long term.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was one of the funny and sad things was the letter Lindsey Graham wrote where he said his explanation for changing his position 180 degrees from, you know, 2016 was or 2015 and 16 was, if the shoe was on the other foot, this is what the Democrats would do. Is that, right. I mean, is it a valid criticism, do you think?
Who knows what we would do in that situation? We haven't been there. What happened was we tried to get Merrick Garland, onto the Supreme Court and the Senate stalled for 9 months. I mean, it really doesn't make any sense. And we should have been out in the streets then about that.
Yeah.
But there was sort of this expectation that, that Trump would not win the election and that we would eventually be able to make that appointment. But that was the wrong calculus for the time, too.
Yeah,
we didn't know what we were getting into.
Absolutely true. I mean, all the people I see now who are saying, "Oh yeah, Trump will probably win." I was one of those people. I still voted, but it was like, yeah, okay. Well, I mean, this is lock set. And I mean, sometimes I think that I can never say that I needed Trump, but in this sense of like remembering how important it is to be active and to work in politics and volunteer and participate, because you need to spread that energy and that excitement for democracy to other people, or we'll all just be defeated by the ennui.
Yeah. And that's another thing about this Supreme Court thing, is we can't let that totally distract us from what's really going on, is that hundreds of thousands of Americans are dying from COVID. And Donald Trump is starting a culture war instead of talking about any of the issues of this campaign. Part of the calculus for them, I think, is that it's a distraction and a win and a pickup on the Supreme Court.
So they're actually seeing pushing the vote through as something that's going to benefit them in the election in certain ways. And, you know, then maybe in other ways, the trade-off is not going to hurt them enough to have them lose.
Well, yeah, they it's a big prize. There's the cost benefit analysis, and it could in some way cost them the Senate. We don't know. But if it gains them a Supreme Court, maybe that's what they all they really care about the most at this point.
Right. And so I don't know if you were planning on talking about this later, but what are the ultimate consequences and most vital consequences of a conservative majority on the Supreme Court that you can perceive at this point?
The very first one is that Obamacare could go away. Just in Washington, 600,000 people would then be without insurance. That would happen. I have not heard that the Republicans have a health care plan, even though we've been promised one all along. Their health care plan has been to get rid of Obamacare or the ACA. And it's not a perfect law, but it has helped made the uninsured rate go down into single digits from close to 20%. So, and I'm thinking of Washington statistic right now. Bob Ferguson is helping argue that case because the federal government won't defend its own law. So some of the states have banded together, and that there's that will come before the court very soon. The other one, of course, is Roe v. Wade, and that will come up in some iteration down the road. Conservatives have been picking away at it in small ways for decades now, and this could turn the tide on that also, just inconceivable to me. But those are two of the major major things. And then also we then cannot expect to make any progress toward equity and justice with the Supreme Court for a very long time. No matter, now there are workarounds for Congress and for the House and the Senate, but it's really makes it just that much more difficult.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm thinking of voting rights, for instance.
Yeah, well, and so one thought I had was like just the most, you know, almost the soonest consequence could also be control over the election results and a determination in if there isn't like a clear landslide in either direction, and there is like a serious contesting of the vote. I mean, what's the likelihood? Is it possible for the Supreme Court to hand Trump a win in a case where there are difficult and muddled results?
They did it for Bush.
They could do it. Well, and so was it a majority? Was it a majority conservative court for the hanging Chad issue?
I can't remember exactly what happened there. But it did come down to the Supreme Court voting on whether Florida had to do a recount or not, and they decided not. And so the results stood, and we had Bush for president following that.
Mm. So really right from the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a great Daily interview from this week, the Daily, the New York Times podcast, with I forget what her name is, but she's one of the leaders of a group that's been working with Trump to help elect conservative judges to basically overturn Roe v. Wade. And, you know, how she noted it was like this, you know, this is like monumental. And for her, she really couldn't stand Trump. But she had never had a president before, never had an elected before that stuck so clearly and so rigidly to what he said he would do once he took office. And that was appoint pro-life justices and work, you know, with her to end Roe v. Wade, basically, as a reality. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting.
That's what's happening with the federal judge appointments. They have made hundreds. They sat on them. The Senate sat on them during Obama's term, and then pushed them all through during Trump's term. And they have really changed the federal judiciary for a long time to come.
And those are all judges that basically, I mean, they feed into the Supreme Court, basically. So they,
yeah.
They...
So let's say Texas passes a law that restricts abortion in some way, and it gets challenged. It goes up through the court system, and a federal judge or panel will make a decision, and then it gets appealed, and then that decision then either stands as is, or the Supreme Court can take it up. And the Supreme Court turns down most cases, but they may take one up that they think is going to move the needle or really clarify something that needs clarifying. There's so many cases that get appealed, they can't take them all by any means, and nor should they. So that's kind of how it works.
Mm. Well, save us, Bruce.
You asked if I was a pundit, and I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
Really. I'm a political organizer, okay, and a party activist. I would use those terms.
Yeah.
You know, full disclosure here, I am the chair of the 24th Legislative District Democrat. I'm an elected PCO, and I'm in the Jefferson County Democrats also. So just for clarity's sake.
Yeah, no, appreciated. Yeah, appreciated. I sometimes feel like I walk the line, but, you know, and I will always be myself on this show, and being myself is I need your analysis, and I appreciate it. And I also appreciate that you reached out to Ariel, and Ariel, shout out to you again. We'll have you on the show again soon. And, you know, to maybe talk more about these issues and about RBG, and not just have it be a male only thing, which, you know, was not at all my intention, but obviously we all need to work and be conscious of the fact that it's really sometimes easy to fall back, especially for being a man and just saying, oh, what's, you know, and not thinking that these perspectives are important, which is something we talked about with Michael, you know, in the last hour was just all this work we have to do in front of us for making a better society. And yet we end up having to deal with these just fundamental issues based around facts and science. Like it's so hard to find even a common ground on things that shouldn't be up for debate, but nonetheless are. And it's something that George Marie and I talk very frequently about when we're on here, is just like, where's our baseline reality? You know, how to be an active, reasonable person involved in politics and talking to quote unquote the other side from reasonable places about issues when we can't agree on facts and science.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does not help that we have someone in the White House who is a Flim Flam man, and he creates an alternate an alternative reality and sells it. That's just really what his whole shtick is. And if he can distract you or convince you of something or just tell you something you would like to believe, then he's going to get away with it. There are enough people who are ready to just go with, yeah, that's what I think, or yeah, that's how I feel. Then they'll just go with it and not examine it too closely. He's also very good at creating the other, you know, instead of the us. So there's somebody to fight against, and he's done that with Antifa and people in cities and minorities, the whole, you know, this whole thing about the virus and where it's from, and the whole how he got elected in the first place with the wall and all these folks coming here and doing all these things. It's all just made up, and there are people who just readily buy into that.
Well, I'd like you to take us back to a fact-based reality somehow, Bruce. Not putting a lot on you, but you did bring us a song today.
Yes,
would you like to introduce it before we go and talk about getting out the vote?
Sure. I brought I'll Take You There by, remind me,
the Staple Singers, Mavis, and Papa.
I've been listening to them since the 60s, and I just love their sound, and the fact that it's a family. There was a documentary recently with Mavis Staples doing most of the talking, and she kind of showed a history of the family, and it's a beautiful story of their music together and where they came from in Chicago and all. And so this whole message of I'll Take You There is kind of dedicated to Ruth. She brought us a long way, and now we need to take ourselves the rest of the way.
All right. So this is I'll Take You There by the Staple Singers, going out to the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Bruce Cowan on Filter.
No.
This is Filter, KPTZ 91.9 FM, and the show today has been, well, it's been about comedy, but it's also been about our current political situation, which, you know, listeners know I don't really pretend to be neutral because I actually don't believe in, well, I'm not a journalist anymore, so I don't have to believe in neutrality completely. I'm afforded to be subjective, because that's not my representation anymore. And complete objectivity is impossible. I don't know why. I feel like I'm making excuses. Let me just shut up and bring Bruce Cowan back into your ears. Bruce, did you disappear during that song because you were just boogieing so
here.
Hard?
I was moving and grooving. That bass line just killed it.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Oh, man. This like live Mavis album from, I don't know, a few years back. But her version of Wade in the Water on that and just the guitarist she has on there, it's just like... Oh God, she's amazing, and she comes from, you know, just iconic musical family. So thank you for taking us there. Now I wonder if you would take us to learn about some ways that we can help encourage people to vote, because I feel like the more people that, well, you tell me, the more people that vote in just in general, whoever you vote for, right? Like we want people to go and make sure that not only are they voting, but that they're reaching out to their peers and maybe even not their peers, right? So what's some of the ways that that if I wanted to go encourage folks to vote for a certain candidate, I could help with that.
Well, there are a few good ways. It is important. We have this president because turnout was low in 2016, and Republicans don't like big turnout. Among Democrats, we always say that when the people vote, Democrats win, and Republicans know that. Demographic trends are against them, so they do everything they can to suppress the vote and gerrymander and do all those other sneaky things. In 2018, turnout was way up, especially for young voters, and that gave us a big blue wave. And for the first time, the baby boomers and folks older than us were outnumbered by younger voters. And Democrats won the House in a blue wave. People are ready to vote. They really want to vote yesterday. And the polls are showing a pretty sturdy lead for Biden-Harris of about 7 or 8% across the board. And the blue wall states are leaning toward Biden, and places like Florida and North Carolina and Georgia are all toss-ups. And the Senate is in the balance too.
And the Senate was in the balance in 2018, right? But it just didn't quite get there. Do you think is it going to be different this time?
In Florida, I think it was low turnout. And Florida would have made the difference, and it would this time. And so this time we're going with the mail-in ballot, as we always do here, and as we have reliably done. We have such a great elections department here at our auditor's office. They're experienced and professional. I want to give a shout-out to Roseanne Carroll and her staff for the hard work they do. So we really want to help them, first of all, by registering early to vote, getting your address straight. You know, a lot of folks move around or aren't sure where they're registered. You can check on that. There are a lot of things you can do at a website that's votewa.gov. So it's votewa.gov. It's a state site, and you put it's the Secretary of State site, and you put in your name and birth date, and it will show you where you're registered. You can register there. You can track your ballot, see if it was mailed, see if it's been received. A lot of things you can do there. So that's the first tip.
And that was votewa.gov?
Votewa.gov.
Good.
And then your ballots will be mailed on October 14th and could take a few days to get to you. The most secure way to return them would be to put them in a drop box instead of the U.S. mail. I don't think I need to go into detail about what's been going on with the mail.
No, I think we talked about that last time.
the The drop boxes are located behind the courthouse, at the county library, at the community centers in Brennan and Quilcene, and at the Nordland Fire Station. You can mail it. You don't need postage. But if you're going to use the mail, do it early so it's sure to get there. The earlier they have the ballots, the more likely they are to be counted on the first night, which is pretty important this time. Americans are going to have to learn to wait for the result.
I was curious about that. Are we going to have, I mean, what do you expect? Or and obviously you don't have to be 100% correct because you're just guessing, but like, are we going to have anything close to a definitive day one result on November 3rd?
So things are shaping up really well for Democrats, and especially for on the president's side. The poll results have been very stable. You expect them to come a little closer together as Election Day gets closer. But Biden is favored to win by anywhere from 70 to 80 some percent. And that includes, and we're talking about Electoral College, the whole shebang. So there's still that other little chance. So,
right. And I mean, the whole chance of 2016 and not trusting the polls.
Right.
Is
exactly.
I obviously feel shaky for people, and hopefully that's a motivator to go vote.
Yeah, exactly. Don't take that 80-20 and stay home. It's important to vote. Now, in Washington, we're also in really good shape. Washington is polling double digits for Biden, double digits for the governor. But there are a lot of other things on the ballot that we want to win, and some of them may be close. There are, you know, and getting involved, you know, taking a look right now at what's on your ballot. Some people like to do their homework, and we've got like eight other, besides the governor, there are eight executive offices, state executive offices on there, lieutenant governor and secretary of state and treasurer are three where Democrats are especially looking to fill an empty seat or flip a seat. So those are important places to take a look. Getting your ballot back early will help the election workers so they don't get everything all at once and they can do a better job. So it's just helpful to them. And I really appreciate all their work. As I say, while the ballots are being received, we have such a great open system. While the ballots are being received, they've set up a webcam. So you can actually watch them process the ballots in the courthouse. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, the integrity of our system in Washington is amazing. And really, there are auditors all across the country doing a fantastic job. And we're counting on them. And really, yes, it could be difficult to know who won the first night. And then if that guy in the White House wants to make a fuss in certain states, he will. And if he can cast, he's already trying to cast a shadow over the result because guess what? I think he expects to lose. So I think Bernie Sanders said it really well earlier today, I think it was. We need the largest voter turnout in American history.
Mm.
And people need to vote as early as possible. And a landslide will make it virtually impossible for Trump to deny the results.
Mm.
And he said that that is our best means for defending democracy. And I think that what we are doing is defending democracy. There are some folks who are so entrenched and so into the Trump thing that they would rather not have majority rule in this instance, perhaps. You know, and it's our basic value. And it's hard to believe, but they've been working against democracy for a long time. So there's no reason to think they're going to stop in this election. So a landslide is the best way, and there is a possibility of that. And when that happens, that makes the Senate possible also, because the coattails effect of the presidential vote will elect enough senators to get a majority, which would really give the president the power to put through so many of the the reforms that are have already been passed in the House and are just sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk.
Because that would be a complete
HR 1 through 9.
A blue. So essentially, it would be like a blue legislative branch, a blue executive branch,
mm-hmm.
and then but a conservative majority Supreme Court.
Yeah. And passing legislation is what Democrats are about. So let's get some good legislation going. Let's take care of health care. Let's take a look at immigration. Let's fix the,
where do we even start,
our
Bruce?
Electoral system.
Let's
get some people appointed to the Federal Elections Commission and fill it up so that they can actually take a look at how fairly elections are being done.
Yeah.
So there's just a huge backlog of things, and inspectors general, all these things that it's going to take time to recover from the damage that's been done. But anyway, let's talk about getting this vote out.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we want a big blue wave, and the younger people are going to be critical to this, and I think that the getting your voting, you're making sure you're registered at your address, you get your ballot, and you get it in. That's the first thing you can do. The next thing you can do is help other people do the same thing. So you start talking to your friends. Okay, so say everybody's all together and they all know what to do. That's great. Maybe you want to, Washington's electoral votes are going to go pretty certainly to Biden. Maybe you want to take a look at someplace else, especially in Jefferson County, where I expect 90% of the people will vote. You might want to look at some other counties and work with the Washington State Democrats. We have phone banks. I've been making calls every Wednesday. There's a training at 5:00. And a friend of mine, Diane Jones, local Democrat, has been organizing that. And you can reach her at her email address, which is Diane, D-I-A-N-E-F-R, Jones, @gmail.com.
And that's for phone banking. Every Wednesday, you can sign up with Diane.
And she'll get you a list.
Great. And you can just make the calls from your house or from wherever you are with your cell phone.
You go to a Zoom meeting and get the training. They send you a link, and then you can go through to a phone list and make phone calls. And there's a script and so on. It's pretty easy.
And is it specific to the day, like Wednesday, that you're supposed to make the calls, or can they just be made anytime within a reasonable hour, of course?
You can make them anytime after that. But they have, preferred times when people are easiest to reach. Now,
what's her email again?
People by phone.
What's her email again?
Her email is Diane F.R. Jones. All one word, @gmail.com.
Got it. All right.
Okay. Now, you might want to make phone calls to swing states. I have a friend, a local guy named Joshua Bartman, who is working on the Biden campaign, and he's organizing callers to swing states. And I have not taken part in that yet, but I will. And you can write to him. He used to be a Buttigieg organizer statewide. He lives here in Port Townsend.
Great.
His email is Josh, J-O-S-H, W-A, #4, Pete, P-E-T-E. You see, he was, Buttigieg organized.
Yep.
So it's Josh Wah for Pete.
At gmail.com. And that's if you want to get involved in phone banking in swing states for Biden.
Correct.
Gotcha. In terms of thinking about, I think a lot of times I am one of those people that gets obsessed with the executive branch and forgets how important down ballot candidates and issues are, and around the country in terms of flipping the Senate, and I mean, it was integral maybe to have folks who didn't live in certain places working to get out the vote in other states. Would you say that's just as important now?
It is important, yes.
So,
making these calls to Georgia, for instance.
Yeah.
There are two Senate races in Georgia.
Two Senate races in Georgia. So two Senate positions open that have possible Democrat candidates being victorious.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do. And there are probably, you know, we're going to have to flip three or four seats to get a majority in the Senate. So that's how to get rid of Mitch McConnell. And then, you know, you can always make donations also to these candidates. I just made a bunch of donations today to Senate candidates across the country. It's important also to win the Senate.
So is there a good way, and this will be sort of my last point, but is there sort of a good way to find a list of those candidates in down ballot races in other states that we should donate to help flip the Senate?
I didn't find one quickly just now, but I did. You can see who is up and who is how the races are rated, but it says who's the incumbent, and it doesn't say the opponent necessarily. I should have a website for that. I'm sorry.
Oh no.
But you could go to cookpolitical.com.
Cookpolitical.com.
Yeah, Cook, just COOK, political.com. And they rate all the races, and you can see which ones are toss-ups, and you can find out who's running there. The main ones in the Senate races are like Mark Kelly in Arizona, Hickenlooper in Colorado, John Ossoff in Georgia. There are about seven that are possible pickups.
Great. Well, so Bruce, I really appreciate you being on the air with me today. I'd like to invite you back to Filter on Friday, November 6th. If we're all still alive then, which we will be, of course. And talk about how everything played out. But in the meantime, thank you for helping us learn how to get out the vote. If anybody wants to contact you with questions about the things you were talking about, is there a good way to reach Bruce Cowan?
Yeah, MrBruceCowan@gmail.com. Also, I want to remind people that the local Democratic Party has a headquarters open up between the roundabouts on Sims Way.
All right, there you go. Oh yeah, we never talked about that, but we'll maybe we'll get to that next time. We'll see. We don't need to talk about that. That was many people who were on Facebook knew about the sign issue up there, but I'm just happy and excited because I actually I went into this show feeling a little bit despondent, and now I'm just excited because, like you say, it is the work here that will save us, not the hand wringing.
That's right. And working together, because it is a social thing.
Well, thank you for being here, Bruce. And we'll see you on November 6th.
All right.
All right. Take care.
I'll be there.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, take me there.